Andrew, thank you so much for taking some time out for Scornos.com. How's everything going on your end?
It's good, Tom. Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful, my friend. Thank you so much. A lot to talk about. Certainly, we want to talk about Journey to the Mysterious Island, but there was a journey of your own that you embarked on for this score. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, before the film even started filming, when they were at the script stage, I got brought on board by the director, Brad Peyton, who's a new director to the franchise. And we started working on themes very early on and talking about themes and the kind of music that we both envisioned with the story. We knew that the film was going to this mysterious island, this island that didn't have any inhabitants, no civilization there anymore, remnants of an old civilization, but just a place, kind of untamed nature, we called it. And talking about what would that sound be? What is the sound of untamed nature in the South Pacific? So, you know, I immediately started researching South Pacific music and Polynesian music and Melanesian music, and found some really interesting stuff, but so much of it bore the scars and the influence of, you know, Western music, European music, I guess from colonialism and missionaries that had introduced these new ideas to these traditional tribal musical elements. So I set out to try to find, you know, the untainted music, the music that would have been there 500 years ago. And in my journeys, I came upon a really great drummer, percussionist, and someone who grew up in Papua New Guinea and now lived in Melbourne, Australia, a guy named Areliki Ingram. And got communicating with him, and he started sending me samples of different kinds of drumming and musical elements in Papua New Guinea. And when I told him what my dream was, what I was really hoping to find, he said, you know, the only way to go back that far to the less civilized version of that music is to go into deep into the jungles of Papua New Guinea to the tribes that haven't had those influences yet. So that's what we did.
And so in your expedition there, what was the most revealing thing that you uncovered? What kind of awakened your senses when you're out there? Is that something you could kind of summarize for us?
Yeah, you know, I knew that the instruments, I had learned a fair bit about the instruments. They have these drums. They're big, large wooden drums, and they're called garamut. And they don't have any skins on them. It's just solid wood. It's basically a large wooden tree trunk that's hollowed out, has a slit put in the top of it, and then through that slit, it's hollowed. The insides are all taken out. And that's basically the drums that are most prominent in Papua New Guinea. Papua New Guinea is made up of, one estimate is there are 1,200 tribes in Papua New Guinea that all speak unique languages, not different dialects of the same language. They're 100% unique. And some of these tribes are as small as 100 people. Some of them, you know, one of the ones I visited was 400. And those are the only 400 people in the world that speak that language or have that culture. So because the tribes are unique, even though some of the instruments are similar in the tribes, they all play them in very different ways, and they all have rhythms that have been passed down from their ancestors that are very unique to the tribe. So the tribe on one side of the river might have very unique rhythms and music to, you know, the tribe 500 yards away on the other side of the river. So I was prepared for the instruments, although the sound of them and just the body that you got out of them, and it's almost the sense they're so deep, that the ones in the Sepik, the large garamut, are so deep sounding. It reminded me of going to rock concerts and standing in front of the speakers and your chest cavity is vibrating. That was the feeling I got, and I was thrilled to get that because that was exactly what I was looking for. I was looking for something that would give you a guttural, emotional fear reaction, and I knew that would be perfect for the film. So I was prepared for the instrument. What I wasn't prepared for was how complex the musical structure was. I'm used to the structure kind of being, you know, Western music, 4-4 time, 3-4 time, compound time, and these repeating cycles or phrases and patterns that repeat. And the music there was far more complicated. The patterns were far more complicated. You know, sometimes a pattern was actually a minute and a half long, as opposed to being 3 bars long or 4 bars long. So yeah, it was really interesting, and that I think I've taken a lot more away from that structure of music and that way of thinking of music for future films.
How excited were you to get back and to start working with those elements within the context of the score?
I was really excited. You know, I recorded 3 different groups in Papua New Guinea, and then I had 2 groups that I'd recorded in Melbourne. One was from the Cook Islands, and the other was my guide's group, Irie. He had a group in Melbourne that played a lot of Papua New Guinea-influenced music. And throughout the trip, we did those recordings first, and I heard some stuff that I could imagine. You know, I think I can work with this. I think I can make this work. And I think I can work the structure into the writing. And then, you know, 3 weeks in Papua New Guinea, it was literally the last recording session on the last day when we found this. It was this island up in the Manus province, this volcanic island, literally its own mysterious island in the middle of the South Pacific Ocean. And these guys started playing these old rhythms, and we'd set up the recording stuff, really hot, 11 a.m. in the morning. And my guide, Irie, said, he looked at me and he could tell by the look on my face that I had found exactly what I was looking for. So it was great. It was kind of that eureka moment where I started hearing this rhythmic structure, this really old ancient rhythmic structure, and imagining how I could get the London Orchestra to play along with it in a way that would work with the film. And I was really excited, especially about that. So that recording session comprises 2 or 3 elements that I ended up using, and there are a few other little bits from the other parts of the trip, but that was the one that was kind of my eureka moment.
And just one last point on this, is there any plans to showcase this journey of yours, either as a DVD extra when the time comes, or some internet stream of the footage that you took during this trip?
Yes, absolutely. There are, we've given footage to the DVD Extras group at Warner Brothers. And they're excited to put something together, and actually talked to a few different documentary companies that wanted to document the trip. One interesting thing about the trip, I had one experience in one village where they said, you know, we're thrilled to have you document this, we're thrilled to have you use it, and you know, go ahead and videotape it. The one thing is, we need to make sure that no women ever see this, because it's against our culture for women to ever see these drums and see this ceremony.
Wow.
So there are a couple of things like that I've made promises to people, and I realize I've got this footage that I could never put on a DVD and have them put a disclaimer, all women, close your eyes for this next section.
Well, as long as you didn't sign a disclaimer form at the village, we might be okay.
Well, one thing that was really interesting is, you know, I'm very aware of cultures being tainted and infected with other cultures. And I really didn't want to do that. I didn't want to set out on this trip to find something that was untainted, only to leave and taint it myself. So I was very conscious of making sure that I abided all of their rules and was very respectful to it. So that's the long answer to your question. The short answer is yes, we will put this stuff together. I've got about 8 hours of footage. I just have to make sure that I don't include the things that I'm asked not to include that are sacred in nature.
No, very, very respectful, and that's the right thing to do, because, you know, one of my questions was going to be, did you play any type of music from the Western world just out of curiosity for them? I presume the answer is no to that.
The answer is no to that. One funny thing happened, though. Every evening, there was no way of charging my battery, so I had brought a little MacBook Air laptop, and I would back up the video and the audio into iMovie and just back it up onto a little USB flash drive through my computer. And I was so careful at nighttime to do this. I didn't want to run out of battery, so I was open the laptop, you know, put it on the least bright setting. The minute I get stuff copying, you know, turn the screen off so it's not draining any power. It was incredibly efficient. And at one point, I was pulling it into iMovie, they said, hey, do you have anything you can show us from your home? Mm. Any video that you took? Because I was showing them video of themselves, which they found very fascinating, because they hadn't seen themselves before. So I said, yeah, I think I might have something. So I bought this camera, this little SD card Canon video camera, very small. And at the weekend before I left, I took it to my four-year-old daughter's ballet recital just to test it out. And sure enough, that's the only footage I had. So here are all these tribesmen warriors standing in this hut, crowded around this MacBook Air, watching these four-year-old girls in little pink tutus dancing and completely awestruck, like they'd never seen anything like this before. If you see in the National Geographic in a year or two that the tribes in Papua New Guinea have adopted the pink tutus, I have gone back on my word.
It's too funny. It's too funny. Well, what a fantastic experience all the way around. And in getting to the score itself, is this installment, did you start fresh musically? Did you carry over any themes from the previous movie? What was your approach getting into the film itself?
Everybody was really married. I have sort of the franchise theme, the main theme to Journey One, which was I guess we called it the journey theme. It was one of four themes in the first movie, and it was kind of our branding of the film and of the franchise. And it was really important to both the director and the producers in the studio that I bring that theme back. But I didn't want that theme to be the backbone of what I was doing. I wanted it to be something I could reference and brand little moments, but I wanted to really develop brand new themes that were appropriate to the film. So the film basically consists of four themes, one being the journey theme, and then three new themes representing other elements that are specific to the movie. And actually, it worked out really well. I was happy not to lean on that theme as much as I did in the first film, but I would think I was able to reinvent it in a lot of ways to make it more appropriate to this film. But I still think it has that recognition factor that everyone was looking for.
Yeah, I mean, your score for the first film, a lot of people dug it. It was exciting for a lot of music fans to hear your thematic approach and then following that up with A City of Ember. So it's safe to say you've embraced that thematic quality for this round as well and then some.
Yeah, thank you. No, it was really fun, and that's one thing that we all agreed on is, you know, we were setting out to make a movie that was reminiscent of The Goonies or, you know, Indiana Jones or those adventure movies, Spielberg, Lucas, those adventure movies that we grew up with in the 80s. And it's not shy. It's trying to be the new version of that, the 2012 version of what those movies represented to us. It's a fun movie. It's scary. It's emotional. But it's a fun ride, and it's an adventure. And so the music as well, I wanted it to be very strong, thematic, but fun. And it can go scary, and it can go emotional, and it can get you excited and get you scared and sad. But in the end of the day, it's a fun ride, and I think that's what we really wanted to come away with.
Also, what's interesting, since one of our previous interviews with Journey One, 3D technology has become even more prominent in theaters. It's commonplace to have a release basically every weekend now. What's your thought on where the technology is now, and do you think there will be an inventive audio technology that could come along as well? I know Lucasfilm is working on something or has worked on something for Red Tails, but do you think the audio experience can go to another level at some point in the future, like 3D has?
That's interesting. You know, that's an interesting point. To talk about the visual side, 3D for a minute, I really like the 3D technology, but I'm also very aware that it caters to a very specific kind of film. I feel like this Journey 2 is such a great example of a good use of this technology. I think of some other movies, you know, The King's Speech, even Drive last year, that I don't know that 3D would have really benefited the storytelling in the same way. In fact, I can imagine how it could have hurt the storytelling of those films. So I think it's something that, in my personal opinion, is appropriate to certain films and not a good improvement on the storytelling for other stories. And I think I can imagine music being the same way. You know, I can imagine if you have, you know, speakers put in really interesting parts of a theater, and we do that now. We'll play with surround. We'll play with putting things in the rear. And if it's IMAX, we'll play with put putting things in the speaker, the voice of God speaker straight above. But as much as it can be really effective in certain scenes, it can also be very distracting away from the experience. So I think my answer would be the same. I think it would be fun to experiment with this new technology in music and this new way in delivery system. But I think we also have to make sure that it never becomes more important than the storytelling.
Yeah, well said. It's all about finding the right fit, just like anything else, finding that harmony. So with this Journey series now at its second film, do you perceive that this will be an ongoing type of franchise?
I think, you know, I think they've really set up the characters and there's a whole wealth of stories. I think it's a really fun adventure series so far with these two films. I think it has a lot of potential to go on and be a franchise. And I think a third film, this film does well, I think a third film is very likely.
And for fans of your work, there's a soundtrack release that's imminent, correct?
That is correct, yeah. It's on Watchtower, the Warner Brothers label, Watchtower Music. And I think it's iTunes and on Amazon CD on demand. I think those are the two. I think there might be a small print release as well. I'm not sure. It's interesting, actually, how in the 4 years since we did Journey 1, I remember wishing that Journey 1 had had more of a physical release. And now, it doesn't happen very often. There's the CDs, hard CDs are becoming more and more rare.
Yeah, that's another interesting trend, and that's just in 4 years. From a reviewer's perspective, the bulk of the copies coming in are digital. And I suppose that's a good thing because it could perhaps get to more people at a cheaper cost.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of digital music in the way that some other people are. The one thing that is funny is that the whole idea of the MP3 being a really tiny file was developed when broadband didn't exist and moving information across the internet was much slower and much smaller quantities. So, I guess I kind of hope that it evolves. Some people have embraced the technology of much higher quality sound files. And I hope that the general public starts to embrace that as well, because I think you miss a lot of, even if it's subconscious, you miss a lot of information in the more compressed, smaller files that the artist goes to a great effort to record and write. So it's nice to have it be a more accurate delivery system.
Yeah, because sometimes the magic is in the subtlety of a particular score. So, good point.
Yeah, and it's funny how if you think back to technology, everything that drove technology up until the MP3 was something that sounds better. People would rebuy their entire collection on CD that they'd already bought on 8-track record and cassette, and now they're buying it on CD again. And then from that point on, the whole idea of the music DVD just never really caught on, and the really small file size, and people were willing to live with lesser quality in the smaller file size. So, yeah, it's interesting how that whole quest for the absolute perfect audio kind of went away with the general public. But I think there are people out there that appreciate it still, and I think that pool of people is going to grow.
Yep, for sure, and not to look too far ahead, but just someone who loves your work. Do you have some plans in store for projects later this year? Now that this one is concluded,
I do. I have a busy year, and it's all kind of it was all perfectly lined up. Every 2 months I had a different project, or some of them were 3 months long. It was perfectly lined up for 2012. And then, sure enough, the nature of our business, things start pushing or advancing, and it becomes this moving tile game of trying to get everything scheduled. So I'm still figuring that out, but I've got some really exciting things that I'll look forward to talking to you about as the year progresses.
No, it sounds good. And like I said, you definitely have a fan base out there, and myself among them, we're definitely looking forward to this new and exciting soundtrack that you put together. So thank you for the effort, number one, and number two, best of luck with the premiere and enjoy.
Thanks so much, Tom. And I hope you get a chance to get out and see the film. I think it's a really fun, clean ride, so it's definitely worth seeing.
Now, that's great. And thank you for taking time out. I know you've had a hectic schedule, to say the least. So thank you so much, and looking forward to talking again with you soon.
Okay. Likewise. Cheers, Tom.